Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shot fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. But I look good. I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? Yes, it's about that time. It is Thursday, September 19th, 2019. It is an absolutely beautiful day here in Mid Michigan. We're gonna see highs in the low 80s today. You know, no rain predicted in the forecast. The sun is out. Sky is blue. Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing. I love it. It's, you know, every once in a while, Michigan will treat us right when it comes to the weather. And so far, this week has been pretty awesome. And it's Thursday already. Can you believe that? Thursday already. One more day until the weekend. And you all will, of course, be glued to your televisions, as you have been these last, like 3 weeks, checking out college football. We have had a lot of college football chatter here on this week's current sports every day, talking about the Michigan State football program, trying to move on from the loss against Arizona State, as Michigan State now looks to head to Illinois to take on the Northwestern Wildcats, a team that is so dangerous. I believe that Michigan State has lost against Northwestern 3 straight times. Don't want to make it 4, I'll tell you that. Something about Northwestern, something about the Wildcats. They always give Michigan State problems. But you can't tell Vegas that. I don't know if you guys have seen the line on this game, but it has moved quite a bit since the beginning of the week. But, you know, it's like Vegas is like, all right, you know, the ASU game, who cares? Michigan State is, you know, they still look good, got one of the top defenses in the nation. We're going with Michigan State. There seems to be a lot of money coming in on Michigan State out in Vegas right now, because that line is now up to 9 points in favor of Michigan State. Interesting. Really interesting there. You know, you look at Northwestern, you know, they did lose at the beginning of the season to a ranked opponent in Stanford. But they're coming off a 30-14 win against UNLV. You know, and Hunter Johnson, he didn't look great in week one. You know, only 7 points for that Wildcats offense, the Clemson transfer. But he rebounded nicely against UNLV. And again, I think Vegas is looking at this and saying, all right, you know, Michigan State still has a top defense. Look at what that offense was able to do against Western. Northwestern is cool, but haven't seen much from Hunter Johnson just yet. Still going with the Spartans to win this. I don't know about that line. I don't know about that. But I just wanted to give you guys an update on that line. On today's show, though, I do want to talk about whether or not the University of Michigan football program, you know, whether or not this is a must win for Jim Harbaugh and the Wolverines as they head to Madison to take on the Wisconsin Badgers, a team that is absolutely rolling right now. You know, just what would the perception be? What will the perception be if the Wolverines were to fall at Wisconsin? And I want to talk about the softness of today's NFL. Now, I get it. You know, it's 2019, and we talk extensively here on Current Sports about CTE and
the knowledge that we're gaining about brain injuries over time as it relates to football and various other sports as well. That is not just a football problem, even though many people try to make it just a football problem. But when it comes to the NFL today and some of the hits that I see, players fined for, I think it's just gone too far. Because at the end of the day, football is a physical sport. Physicality is its first name, really. And, you know, I looked at the Jamal Adams hit. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but he got called for a late hit against, you know, Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns earlier this week. And he has been fined for that hit. And I'm going to tell you why it's absolutely ridiculous. And we'll go back in time. We'll hop into our current sports time machine to take a look at exactly what occurred on this day in sports history. We'll have Throwback Thursday for you. Loaded show. Multiple ways in which you can be a part of it. 517-355-WKAR. 517-355-9527. Go to facebook.com/WKAR News. Watch the live stream near a comment below it. I'll do my best to get to a few of your comments throughout the hour. And you can also tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR News. You know what's next? Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. We start here, the Michigan State women's soccer program, after a successful start to the 2019 campaign with their non-conference matchups going 7-1 as they travel to Columbus now to take on Ohio State for their first Big Ten matchup. The Spartans closed out non-conference play this week with wins over Bowling Green in overtime, 3-2, and a road shutout over Oakland, 2-0. Now, in the 17th minute, freshman forward Paige Weber, reigning Big Ten Freshman Player of the Week, Paige Weber got the Spartans on the board first with what would end up being the game winner. Also, so far this season, Weber has 2 game-tying goals to force overtime and a game-winning goal. She is already a star. Gia Wahlberg continues to shine on the Spartans' offense as well, scoring the game winner in overtime against Bowling Green. This was Wahlberg's 2nd overtime goal this season, with the first in double OT versus Boston University on September 1st. She also has 4 game-winning goals and 8 total goals so far this season. So, again, Michigan State and Ohio State today is they open up Big Ten play and resume, of course, the season, and the time for that matchup will be 8 p.m. tonight. You can catch it on the Big Ten Network. All right, the 6'4", 250-pound offensive lineman and John Runyon Jr. Is returning to the lineup to help block for Shea Patterson in the Michigan football game this weekend against Wisconsin. This is what Runyon, I should say, is a starting offensive lineman. Although Warner didn't specifically say Runyon will get the start against the Badgers, however, that would be a safe assumption if Runyon is ready to get back on the field. So we'll see what happens, but it looks as though John Runyon Jr. is going to be a go against the Badgers on Saturday. And the Detroit Tigers, another day, another loss. The Tigers took another game into extra innings for the 16th time this season, tied for the most in the majors. But did not come out with the W. They lost to Yasiel Puig, a walk-off by Puig, a walk-off single with the bases loaded to the top. The Tigers closed this one, closed this AL Central matchup, I should say. The Tigers are now 45-106, just horrible. Won the year and remain 47.5 games from the first place Twins. Again, they're never, season's over for the Tigers in that respective division. So there's not a chance at all. That's done. Also, New York Jets safety Jamal Adams, he has been fined $21K for a roughing the passer penalty against the Cleveland Browns for a hit that he had on quarterback Baker Mayfield on Monday Night Football. I couldn't believe that he got fined for this. Adams posted a video clip of the play from the Jets' 23-3 loss, saying, quote, "This league is a joke. I signed up to play football, not two-hand touch. Bleep. I don't give a bleep about these soft rules protecting QBs. I'm going to play my brand of football every time I step on the field." And I really do feel Jamal Adams on this. I thought it was just a football play. But in 2019, I just believe that they are going to always protect the quarterback, overly protect the quarterback, and players in general. I get it because of safety concerns, but when it comes to this play, really. More on that story later on this hour. Also, Pittsburgh DA will not investigate Antonio Brown. So the Allegheny County, Pennsylvania District Attorney's Office and Police Department reached out to the lawyer of Antonio Brown's accuser, who is Brittany Taylor, regarding a 2017 sexual assault allegation. But a statute of limitations will prevent the office from investigating an incident in which Taylor says occurred at Brown's Pittsburgh home. The DA's office confirmed that to NFL.com on Wednesday. Taylor said in a federal lawsuit filed last week that Brown did sexually assault her on three separate occasions. Brown has since denied these allegations. We've been talking about this extensively these last 2 weeks now. NFL insider Ian Rappaport reports that due to a statute of limitations, Brown will not face criminal charges in Pittsburgh for the first of three sexual assault allegations cited in the lawsuit, two of which allegedly occurred in Florida. Brown is also accused of sexually assaulting Taylor in May of 2018 in Miami. Taylor met with the league investigators on Monday as the NFL ramps up its investigation into these allegations against Antonio Brown. Rappaport reported on Wednesday that it currently appears Brown will remain eligible to play this Sunday when the New England Patriots play host to the New York Jets. And the Taco Charlton truck is being towed out of Dallas. We saw this coming, right? As my Cowboys have released the former first-round defensive end on Wednesday after two-plus seasons with the club. Dallas's 2017 number 28 overall pick had been very unhappy with the organization for quite some time. After being ruled inactive for Dallas's first two games of the season, Charlton tweeted, quote, "Free me," on Monday before deleting the message. Now, Charlton's cut comes after Dallas opened the door for trade talks for the 24-year-old edge rusher from Michigan, with veteran defensive end Robert Quinn returning from suspension and no bidders on the trade market for Taco services. The Cowboys have opted to waive him. And Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, Australian star Jason Day, and Japan's Hideki Matsuyama will compete in a skins game next month in Japan. It's going to be called the Challenge Japan Skins, in which it will pit 15-time major winner Woods against McIlroy, Matsuyama, and Day, as top stars from four continents will play on October 21st at Accordia Golf Narashino Country Club in Chiba, Japan. This is a quote coming from Rory McIlroy, the four-time major winner that he is. Quote, "There are so many fun elements to the challenge that will have me wanting to take home that title. Playing with Hideki on his home turf, Tiger coming back to Japan with a green jacket, the motivation is certainly there for me." The Skins game will mark the competitive return to Japan for Woods after more than 13 years and the first televised exhibition match for McIlroy. Day, and Matsuyama. And last but not least here, Team USA Basketball has kept its number one spot in the FIBA World Men's Rankings even after a disappointing seventh place showing in the World Cup that ended earlier this week. I touched on that just a bit because a lot of people are bashing the USA Basketball team for not pulling out the gold medal. And, you know, a lot of stars decided not to play. I totally get it. It's not the Olympics. You want to rest your body up for the upcoming NBA year. These stars want to chillax. You want to rest up. I get it. So, it's now 9 years and counting in the top spot, though, for the U.S., which has held on for the number one ranking since the 2010 World Championship. World Cup champ Spain stayed number two. Australia leaped eight spots to number three. I think that Giannis Antetokounmpo has a lot to do with that. World Cup finalist Argentina rose one spot to number four, and World Cup bronze medalist France fell two slots to number five. Now, FIBA's rankings take results from the most recent 8 years into account, so that's why you still have USA ranked number one, despite the showing that they had in the last FIBA basketball championships, which means the U.S. is still reaping point benefits from the 2012 and 2016 Olympic gold medals and the 2014 World Cup title. It's now expected that the U.S. will retain the number one ranking going into the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. Several top NBA players, including Steph Curry, we brought that story to you yesterday, former MSU great Draymond Green, and Damian Lillard have said in recent days that they do intend to play for the United States in Tokyo, where the Americans will try to win a fourth consecutive gold medal. So you see the difference in commitment. You're seeing these bigger names say, yeah, I want to play in Tokyo, but when it comes to the FIBA World Championships, come on, man. So there you have that. All right, that does it for your current sports quick hit headliners. Any thoughts on those or anything that's on your sports noggin? You know that there are multiple ways in which you can join the fun here throughout the hour. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Go to facebook.com/WKAR News. You can enjoy the live stream there and comment below the video. And you can tweet us. Two ways to do so. You can tweet me directly, or at least shoot me or the show a follow, at Al Martin, WKAR. Follow the show at WKAR News. All right, here we go. Happy Thursday, ladies and gents, boys and girls. Thank you so much for allowing Current Sports to be a part of your Thursday. Before I move forward, can I give a huge shout out to the Detroit Youth Choir? You know, I don't watch every week America's Got Talent. You know, I'm usually watching a TV show. I'm a big movie guy as well. And, of course, obviously, I'm a big sports fan. So that is what dominates my viewing pleasure on a weekly basis. I don't watch much of AGT. But I did tune in last night. I was glued to my television for 2 hours awaiting the results of who was going to take home America's Got Talent, the championship in which you win like $1 million and you also get a brief residency in Las Vegas. And the Detroit Youth Choir, man, I was sitting there so nervous. You know, it was live. Terry Crews is the host, and he's sitting there, as they're dwindling The finalists down from 10, then to 5, then, of course, down to 1. And the Detroit Youth Choir, I am so proud of those young men and women. I have a few fraternity brothers who do a lot of charitable work in Detroit who work directly with the Detroit Youth Choir, who know some of those fantastic young men and women. And they were posting on their social media, Instagram stories throughout the night, you know, rooting for them. And I'm sitting there saying, oh, my goodness, they're in the top 5 now. Oh, wow. They're in the top 4, the top 3. They made it all the way to the top 2. Came in second place out of all of the acts that AGT auditioned throughout this process across the nation, heck, even globally. The Detroit Youth Choir came in second place. That is unbelievably awesome. So I just want to give a shout out to the Detroit Youth Choir and all of those talented young men and women. This is only the beginning for you all. That was really cool to watch. And as far as the winner goes, I mean, you got to give a shout out to Cody Lee, you know, who is just amazing. He's an autistic, blind piano player and singer. He just blows your mind. Actually, I can't even lie. The first time I saw him perform on that show, on Facebook, actually, because I caught a replay of it, teared up a bit. My goodness. What a competition, and congrats to the Detroit Youth Choir. All right, with that off my chest now, as I mentioned at the top of the hour, it's kind of jarring to me just a little bit, that Michigan State is a 9-point favorite against Northwestern. Now, there are reasons for this, because if you think, Spartan fans, let me just say this to you. If you think your offense is bad, you have not seen Northwestern's offense yet. All right? If you think watching Michigan State throughout these first 3 games, that offense has got some bugaboos and problems, you have not seen the offense of the Wildcats. Because right now, the Wildcats offensively rank 112th in college football in total offense. Michigan State is 57th. And, you know, and it's not like when you look at Northwestern's first 2 games, you know, as I mentioned, you know, they played Stanford in week 1. They lost that game by 10 points, 17-7. And then they took on UNLV, put up 30 points against UNLV in a 30-14 win. It's not like these two teams have had lights out defenses, okay? Just, you know, those are really bad numbers. You know, I mean, Michigan State sitting at 57th, that's actually, I guess, decent. You know, you compare that to Northwestern's 112. So, you know, and I'm curious, though, to see, because I think that, I don't know what happens when Northwestern plays Michigan State. Like, all the numbers just go out the window, and Northwestern somehow, some way, finds a way to push Coach D'Antonio to his brink, and they come out with dubs, man. Believe, Jack, correct me if I'm wrong, it's 3 straight wins, right? I believe that the last 3 times that Michigan State has played Northwestern, Michigan State has lost all 3 times. Am I right in saying that?
Yep, correct. Yep.
Okay. So you don't want to make it 4 straight here, all right? And Northwestern's passing game, you know, I'm you know, it's still early, but he's been getting a lot of flack. And it's not like Hunter Johnson, the Clemson transfer, a former 5-star recruit. It's not like when Hunter walked in the doors at Northwestern, he was immediately the guy. If you remember throughout training camp, he still had to battle for that position. All right, he had to really earn that position. Right now, you know, looking at this passing game for Northwestern, it ranks 122nd out of 130 teams. You want to put that into further context? Tulsa ranks 81st. Arizona State ranks 67th. Just think about that. This offense is very, very bad. So, looking at that 9-point line, when taking that in account, I think a lot of people are looking at this and saying, oh, that Northwestern offense is so bad. Michigan State's defense is really keeping this team afloat right now. They have been for a while, one of the best defenses in the nation. And, you know, and you're sitting there saying, okay, how can Hunter Johnson and Northwestern put up points against Michigan State? it doesn't look good for them. So I understand, I guess, the 9-point line from there. But I'm still a bit shocked just because of how jarring, how deflating that loss against Arizona State was. And then you look at the history of this matchup between the Spartans and the Wildcats. I guess bettors right now don't care about that history. They are all in on Michigan State. I don't know. I think in order for Northwestern to win on Saturday, Hunter Johnson is going to have a lights out game. This is going to have to be his breakout game. That's all I'm going to say on that. Now I'm going to dive more into the X's and the O's and talk about Northwestern and what makes them dangerous on the defensive side of the football, because I think this defense is okay. You know, I'll break that down further on tomorrow's Current Sports. All right, it's still Thursday. Just wanted to give you a little taste right there. Michigan. Oh, the Michigan Wolverines. Oh boy. And you know what? And I kind of take back Jack Kerwin behind the glass. You know, Jack, I think yesterday, it was yesterday's show, right? When I mentioned my boy Colin Cowherd, you know, and how big of a fan he is when it comes to the you know, Jim Harbaugh and the Michigan Wolverines. And, you know, I listened to
I think I know where you're going with this here.
You know where I'm going.
I think you might be, but continue.
He sat down with Joe Klatt, but he did have an error, too. He had a really bad error on yesterday's show. Did you see that?
It wasn't yesterday's show. It was like over a week ago, I thought.
Oh,
but it just
was.
Surfaced yesterday, yeah.
I saw it blowing up
on
my social
media. Yeah, it blew up like yesterday, but if I recall right, I think I saw that clip with him and Urban Meyer like over a week ago. Yeah.
Okay, that's where I was going to, because I'm like, Colin, come on, dude, you got to be better than that. He messed up a recruit that had played under Urban.
He was talking
years.
About Joe Burrow, the quarterback
Joe
of
Burrow.
LSU,
right.
Who was at Ohio State the first like 3 years because he's from Ohio, and that was kind of Cowherd's whole point. He grew up in Ohio, and he had transferred to LSU, and Cowherd didn't seem to be aware of that because, you know, he had Urban Meyer in studio, and he said, "What's the deal with this Burrow kid? Did you know him at all?" And he said, "Yeah, great family, you know, absolutely tremendous player, great kid." And Cowherd right. said, like, "Well, what happened? How'd you let him out of the state of Ohio?" And he was like, "Well, like, dude, he was here for 3 years.
He played under me for 3 years at Ohio State, man. Yeah, Joe Burrow was the player." And I'm like, "Whoa, did this happen yet?" Because I didn't see that bit yesterday, so it was a while ago when that.
I believe it was okay. Like over a week ago. But you know what? The worst part of that is like, that's tough to call yourself like a college football analyst when like I don't know anybody who's a big college football guy who didn't know that Joe Burrow came from Ohio State.
Exactly, and that's the thing too. I mean. That kind of gave me more insight into how off the mark Cowherd can be sometimes with his college football takes. Exactly, you call yourself, "Yeah, I love college," but you didn't know that.
Like, everyone knows that. Everyone knows Joe Burrow came from Ohio State.
Like, come on, dude. He played, again, 3 years. His coach is sitting right in front of you during your show, and you're like, "How'd you let him out the, like, what? How'd you let him out the program?" So anyway, I say all that to say this. I sat down and watched his bit with Joe Klatt. Well, I believe him and Gus Johnson. By the way, I like Gus Johnson and Klatt on the broadcast together. I'm a big Gus guy. I like those two.
I like Gus a lot more than I do Klatt. Let's put it that way.
Well, of course you like Gus. He comes from he's a U of D guy.
He is a U of D guy. I think Klatt is better in studio. The problem with Klatt almost to me tries to be like too much of a Kirk Herbstreit, where he just seems to be Mr. Brightside all the time, but like he doesn't do it as well as Herbstreit does, in my opinion.
I can see that. He's like the B version of Herbstreit.
Yeah, he's like positive towards everybody, but like,
yeah,
he doesn't wow me with his analysis the way Herbstreit does, I guess.
Right. I just like the dynamic of those two on the air because they joke around, and you know, they he's always Klatt is always, you know, Gus being from Detroit, he's always shouting out Detroit, and they have good chemistry. I like the way they play off of each other during the broadcast. But so I believe those two are doing the Michigan and Wisconsin game, I believe. This weekend. So, yeah, they are. Jack, give me the thumbs up. So they are. And, Joe is on there with Joel is on there with Colin, and they're talking about the matchup. And I was very shocked. Cowherd kind of, you know, put Harbaugh's feet to the fire during that segment and basically said, "Look, man,
You know, if you lose to Wisconsin, and then, you know, what surprised me was Joe Klatt tried to, like, back up, because he's a big Urban Meyer, a big Jim Harbaugh fan as well. And he's like, well, you know, Harbaugh did hand the keys to the car of that offense over to Josh Gattis, so it's all on him. And the Cowherd is like, no, he's the head coach. He's getting paid a lot of money, and he has not fared successfully against his rivals. And, you know, got to get to a Big Ten championship game. If he does not win this game, that's on Jim Harbaugh. And so it was kind of interesting watching that back and forth. And it got me just to thinking that, yeah, I think even though Michigan is the underdog in this game, with all of the hype, and I do feel like I'm beating a dead horse, because I feel like I say this every single year when it comes to Michigan. This is a do-or-die year for Jim Harbaugh. I've been saying that for the last 3 years. The fan base is going to turn this time. How can you not? You can't beat your rivals. You haven't been to Indy just yet. And then somehow, some way, Michigan fans find that glass half full optimism and say, yeah, well, we got next year. Well, yeah, let's look at the next game. I don't know how you guys do it. But if you lose to Wisconsin, which you're expected to do so, if you lose to Wisconsin on Saturday and you have the same woes that we've seen throughout the first 2 weeks of your season, I don't know how much to – I think the perception will further get validated on those who already think Jim Harbaugh is tremendously overrated, and we just have more evidence to prove that case. I'm sure there are going to be Michigan fans out there that say, well, we can still rebound this year. We still got our goals in front of us. We still beat Ohio State, if we still beat Michigan State. But if your team looks the same, if that offense specifically, if that offense looks the same like we've seen in those first two games, man, Jim Harbaugh, I don't know how you survive, dude. I just don't know. Because if you can't beat Wisconsin, you really think you're going to beat Ohio State? If you can't beat Wisconsin, well, Michigan State's a different story. You can probably beat Michigan State. I don't know with the way Michigan State is looking. Well, but you look at Michigan State's defense. I won't go down that rabbit hole just yet. But, you know, Michigan has not won a Big Ten title since 2004, yep. Right? 2004. They have yet to advance, Jack, to the Big Ten championship game, which, you know, has been played annually since the conference, you know, formed those divisions in 2011. So it's like this is do or die time. It really is to me. I mean, and, you know, all of the hype coming into this year about you guys being the preseason favorites, you have to start off the Big Ten year on the right foot. Now, I think, Jack, I'll say this. If Michigan comes out and is very competitive against Wisconsin, if this is a close loss, then all right. I think Michigan fans will give the – I think they'll give Jim Harbaugh a pass. I think they will. They'll say, well, you competed against one of the best teams in the Big Ten Conference. Right now, Wisconsin looks really good.
Okay,
they have shut out opponents so far this season. That offense looks amazing. Jonathan Taylor is a man amongst
stud.
Boys. He's
yep.
a stud, right? So if you're competitive and that offense is putting up, you know, big points, but you lose in a close one, it comes down to the wire – I think that people will look at Michigan in a different light. Like, okay, they must have figured out something with that bye week. But if you get blown out at the water and you look like that same team that we saw before the bye, perceptions are going to change.
You might be right about that, but I don't think Jim Harbaugh and the University of Michigan should be given any passes if they lose this game, just because we're in year five and he hasn't been to the conference championship yet. And I mean, when you look at the two rosters, Michigan has a more talented roster than Wisconsin. I don't think anyone's going to argue to the contrary. You know, they have three receivers that are going to be playing on Sundays. They have an offensive lineman who's going to be playing on Sundays. Wisconsin obviously has plenty of those. And, you know, a lot of guys on that defense back from last season, you know, LeVert Hill, Kalik Hudson, those are NFL players, you know, Quiddy Pay, Josh Uche. So for me, there are no excuses for Jim Harbaugh. I understand this game's on the road. This isn't the easiest challenge he's had so far at Michigan, you know, in terms of getting his signature win. But, you know, he hasn't fared well in any of his challenges leading up to this point. You know, at some point, the University of Michigan needs to find a way to win a big game under Jim Harbaugh. And they really haven't yet. So I'm not giving them any type of benefit of the doubt if they're not able to pull it off on Saturday.
Yeah, and this will be a game for Michigan in which you're taking on a ranked opponent. You know, Wisconsin is 13th in the nation right now. Do you know Jim's record off the top of your head, Jack, when it comes to his record against ranked opponents at Michigan?
It's either 1-9 or 1-10.
Yeah, it's one win, right? It's one win. So
not great.
It's horrible. It is horrible. So this will further, again, just add more evidence to the notion, to the perception, to the reality, I should say, that Jim Harbaugh can't win the big games. I'm also excited to see what happens between a totally different game here, Jack, but between, I believe the big game this weekend is Georgia and Notre Dame, right?
Yeah, right, absolutely.
I'm looking forward to watching that one because I believe that, you know, if Georgia loses that game, I think if you are a Big Ten fan, you got to be rooting for Georgia, right? Because you don't want to see Notre Dame continue to beef up that argument that they deserve to be in the college football playoff again, right? I mean, and that would just be another slot that the Big Ten doesn't get. I'm still sticking to this, but I still believe that the Big Ten is going to end up getting the short end of the stick again this year. I think that the Big Ten is going to be out of the college football playoff yet again, but with hope still intact here, you got to be rooting for Georgia if you're a fan of the Big Ten, right?
Well, the only issue I take with that is if you're a Big Ten fan, aren't you tired of seeing two SEC teams make it to the college football playoff as well?
Sure.
Which,
yeah.
I mean, in all likelihood, I think two SEC teams are getting to the college football playoff this year, which I don't think is ideal for the average Big Ten fan either. I personally don't care. I just want to see, you know, really exciting matchups when the Big Four, I guess, the Final Four kind of make it. And I wouldn't have an issue if Notre Dame gets in if they win all of their football games because, you know, I don't like that Notre Dame's not in a conference, but I won't write off that, like, I do believe Notre Dame's a very good team this year, and
they're
I believe
solid.
Last year they
yeah.
deserve to make it as well, so.
Right, right. Man, did I can't remember now. I'm getting old. Did I vibe for Notre Dame getting in last year?
You vibe to expand the playoff to 8 teams, which
oh,
would
sure.
just be the worst possible scenario.
That's where we differ. That's where we do. We go back. We've been going back and forth about that for a while. So that's where we differ with that. But yeah, that's the big game. 8 p.m. on CBS, Notre Dame and Georgia, 7-3. That's going to be a fun game. I can't wait to watch that. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, I want to talk about how football is changing. We all know that. And more than ever, and I think for the most part deservingly so, more than ever we are looking at the health of football players today, and we're trying to make modifications to the game that protect players on the football field. But what I saw happen with Jamal Adams being fined for his quote-unquote late hit on Baker Mayfield, that was a crime. That and more, we'll be right back. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. A little Lupe fiasco for you, man. Lupe, you know, in my all-time favorite hip-hop artist list, Lupe's in my top five, man. I'll never forget when Lupe came to Michigan State back in 2008. That fall, that was my freshman year of college. Me and my roommates went out to go see him at the MSU Auditorium. Still to this day, the greatest concert ever. And fitting that you play that coming back after the break, Jack, because today marks the what? Let's see here. 12-year anniversary. Yeah, 12-year anniversary of Lupe's Food and Liquor. That was the album that put Lupe on the map. So, and Lupe actually posted the photo shoot of that cover 4 hours ago on his Instagram page. So fitting. Did you know that? You probably didn't know that. You just went with the flow, right?
No, I was aware. definitely not. No, it was pure coincidence. But props to me.
Props to you, man. You're spot on. You
weren't buying that for a second.
I was not. Did you hear the laugh? I just immediately had to just let that out as soon as you said that. So, yeah, shout out to Lupe Fiasco, man. That's my guy. All right. Well, as we move forward here on WKAR's Current Sports, real quick, though, I'm getting some action on my Twitter feed, which barely happens throughout a regular hour here on Current Sports. And Scott Little, he's sent me a tweet that says, Al, MSU is a team playing with zero confidence. Just my opinion. Great show as always. Thank you so much, Scott, for that tweet. And, yeah, I think that's the thing about this Northwestern matchup. You know, you can look at it a few different ways. And one way that you can look at this, is to say that, all right, Michigan State, such a heartbreaking loss. You can go two ways. You can go down two roads. That's one of those losses that can really be deflating and can make you evaluate things and overthink things, and you can go into a downward spiral. Or you can look at it and say it could be a wake-up call. It could be a slap in the face that we really need to get our stuff together. We really got some problems. Let's go. Let's hit it hard in practice. The season is not over. And, if Michigan State shores up some things and approaches this game with that mentality, I don't know. Who knows what could happen? But I don't know. I just think this team has so many different problems right now, primarily on that offensive line and the amount of injuries on that offensive line. It's being put together right now with, again, as I joked earlier this week, with spit and duct tape right now, with the news that Kevin Jarvis is out. He's going to be out 6 to 7 weeks. That's tough. So, right now this team has to approach this game with a renewed mentality. They got to rally the troops. And I think they will be extremely motivated against Northwestern to get out of the doghouse, to get a win after a loss like that. So, and you know what's surprising, Jack? Thought about this morning as well. I have not heard many people, and I get it because of the larger picture of that loss to Arizona State. I have not heard a lot of people bash Matt Coughlin. They just haven't. They haven't brought him up. I haven't heard many people bringing him up or tweeting about him and so on and so forth, just because I think that the offense had so many opportunities and went out there and only scored 7 points that it's like, all right, we'll give Matt a pass here. But usually in a game like that, when you see your kicker miss 3 field goals, usually that kicker is getting dragged the following week. Am I right or am I wrong?
Oh, I guess you just haven't been listening to me then, because I've been extraordinarily critical of Matt Coughlin this week. Only because...
I haven't heard others really bringing the dude up.
I mean, maybe not, just because, to your point, so many aspects of that game were awful.
Right.
And MSU as a whole played awful. But for me, it goes back to, if Coughlin, if MSU lost this game 16-13, for example, and Coughlin makes his first 2 field goal attempts, and then he goes to kick the last 2nd field goal and he misses it, I'm not going
to
rip Matt Coughlin at that. Yeah, I'm not going
to
rip him at that point, right?
Right.
But, a college kicker at Michigan State University, it's a huge pressure moment for him to kick that last 2nd field goal from like 46 yards away. But guess what? If he hits the 30-yarder earlier in the game, then that kicks to win it instead of to tie it. And if he doesn't make it, then no big deal. We just play overtime. So
exactly.
I have been extraordinarily critical of Matt Coughlin this week.
And I think he deserves some criticism. I mean, as a kicker, I know I don't like to simplify it like this, but yeah, you got one job, man.
You got to put it through the pipes.
You got to
put the ball through the pipes.
Exactly. You have to. I mean, that's your job. Go out there and handle your business, man. So yeah, we'll see how he rebounds this upcoming weekend against Northwestern. So, all right. Just want to touch on this briefly before we hit this final break, because I don't know. Sometimes when I'm watching football, and when I'm watching, especially in the NFL, when I'm watching just a regular game on a Sunday, Thursday or Monday, whenever, right? I mean, football is just like 7 days a week almost now, right? But I look at some of the plays that occur, and I say to myself, that's just football, man. And I saw the big headline concerning Jamal Adams, who, Jamal Adams, he played against the Cleveland Browns. He is a strong safety for the New York Jets, and the Jets ended up getting just
blown out the water. That is a bad football team right now. In fairness, though, I mean, they're missing their starting quarterback right now due to mononucleosis of all things. Mono. Sam Darnold has mono. I thought that was just like a youth disease or a college thing.
Well, it is kind of a college thing, but I mean, if you're a Jets fan, doesn't it have to be a feather in your cap a little bit? Because it means your quarterback kisses a lot of girls.
I guess probably not the right
girls, but he kisses a lot of girls.
Yeah, because that's like the rumor. That's how you get it, right? So,
you basically, you share a drink with someone or you kiss someone who has it. So
right.
Tough look for the Jets.
Right, right. And that's how, I don't mean to put him out there like that, but my fraternity brother had mono back in college due to that. He contracted it through kissing. So, yeah. So with that being said, Jamal Adams and the New York Jets, they got completely blown out. The reason why Jamal Adams is making the headlines right now is because he posted a video clip of the play that got him a fine of $21,506. It was a roughing the passer penalty against Cleveland Browns quarterback Baker Mayfield on Monday night. And he put the NFL on blast on his social media page. You know, I read the quote during our headliners. If you missed that, this is a bit of what Jamal had to say. Quote, "This league is a bleeping joke. I signed up to play football, not two-hand touch. I don't give a bleep about the soft rules protecting QBs. I'm going to play my brand of football every time I step on the field." And it was a chippy game between the Jets and Browns. But if you look at the play, I don't get it either. Because, it happened right after Baker Mayfield, let the pigskin fly. And it seemed to be pretty fair to me. There was some contact, but I don't think he totally led with his head or there was anything vicious on that play. And again, it's just tough to watch sometimes because I'm seeing this happen more and more in today's NFL where we have a clear case of overprotection. And I think that the NFL right now is so hypersensitive because of the dialogue that's happening within the NFL game and, heck, college, especially when it comes to youth sports and youth football today, protecting players due to what we are learning more and more about the effects of brain injuries over time and how many NFL players, former NFL players, have been diagnosed with chronic traumatic encephalopathy. I get it. You want to protect these players. But there are other layers to this as well. A lot of these players understand what they're signing up for. Okay? With what we're understanding more and more about CTE and brain injuries, a lot of these players understand it to its fullest, but still want to play the game they love. That's part of the risk that you sign up for when playing football or any contact sport for that matter. And some plays are so bang bang, are so in the moment. I just think the NFL needs to sit down and really take a look at how they plan on mandating these kind of plays in the future. Because what I saw happen to Jamal Adams, now again, that's a drop in the bucket for him, $21K, but it's still moolah. And you look at the amount of fines across the NFL just right now in 2019, just in the infancy of the season right now. In week one, Jonathan Abram, safety, he got fined $28K for impermissible use of the helmet. Greg Robinson, he also was fined. Left tackle for Cleveland. Jonathan Abram, he's safety for the Oakland Raiders. Then you have Sheldon Richardson, defensive tackle for Cleveland. He was fined $21K. You have Derrick Henry, running back for Tennessee. He got fined $10K for a face mask. Henry Anderson, roughing the passer, defensive end for the Giants. He got fined $10K. Keanu Neal, strong safety for the Atlanta Falcons. Impermissible use of the helmet. Now I get the helmet situation because leading with your helmet is just so dangerous. I mean, you are turning yourself into a torpedo and just thrusting yourself towards that whoever that player is. That can cause lifetime damage. to a player. I get that. But what I saw happen with Jamal Adams, I'm sitting there saying to myself, I mean, yeah, did he come down a bit? Yeah, but I saw his hands kind of push off. It wasn't leading with the helmet. And as far as the timing of the hit, again, it happened right after Baker Mayfield threw the football. But there are so many, and just through week one of the NFL season, I'm looking here, and there are about, let's see here, 20 different fines on players. I haven't even looked at week two. I don't know what week two looks like, but I'm just looking at week one right now on SpoTrack.com. A lot of them are, you know, you got roughing the passer, you got roughing the passer, blindside block, then you got some unsportsmanlike conducts, and a lot of leading with the helmets, impermissible use of the helmet. I'm assuming that's leading with the helmet. Some of these plays are just, again, are just ridiculous to me. And I get it. The NFL is protecting the, you know, you're also protecting the product at the end of the day. This is a business decision as well, because fans want to see scoring nowadays. And you want to see high-flying, touchdown after touchdown type football. And that comes through the quarterback's arm. So you got to protect the quarterbacks. And the quarterback is the franchise. And Baker Mayfield is one of the, you love him or hate him, he's one of the most popular players in the game right now. I mean, heck, I can't even turn on, you know, the NFL Network without seeing one Baker Mayfield commercial. So they're going to overly protect a guy like him. But in a case like this, I think that Jamal Adams deserves to be ticked off. And I don't know if there is an appeal process, Jack, but if there is, man, I'm appealing that one. It's a crime. It really is. And it's tough to watch sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely an appeal process for suspension, so I would imagine there is for fines, too. I feel like he probably won't go through with it because, to your point, it's probably not a whole lot of money to Jamal Adams, and it's probably more a hassle than anything else to, you know, go through the process to appeal it. But I'm totally with you, man. I mean, the NFL's been legislating defense out of the game the past several years in an effort to, you know, make the game safer and to protect offensive players. But at some point, you got to understand that football's football, and these defensive players have a job to do. And, you know, at the end of the day, the quarterback's going to get hit sometimes. And, you know, I don't think there was anything malicious about it. I don't think there was anything overly dangerous about the play. And, I mean, you got to let Jamal Adams play there.
Exactly. I think he has a legitimate gripe. And, you know, it kind of reminds me of what's happening in the association as well, in the NBA, which I love. You know, the NBA, I think they looked at what was happening in the 80s, in the 90s, and the bully ball, and the Detroit, you know, Pistons bad boys era, and the New York Knicks versus the Chicago Bulls. And they said that, all right, you know, let's try a different brand, because a lot of people were complaining, and, you know, they wanted to see they wanted to see more scoring. So they started over-officiating the game of basketball, which is, if you look at basketball now, if you look at the NBA right now, I think the average score is something like 110. It's crazy now. And in high offense, that's what a lot of fans out there want to see. It has worked for the NBA because a lot of people love the offense and the dunks and the high scoring and that kind of thing. It's become a global brand, and people enjoy what the NBA has done in that regard. So there's a business side to this as well. More scoring leads to more eyeballs. It's tough to play defense in the association and especially the NFL. Your thoughts? 517-355-WKAR. We only have about 5 minutes left here in the hour, though. If you do call, it would have to be quick. Let's hear our final break. When we come back, we'll usher you in to the rest of your afternoon and evening with some Throwback Thursday. We'll be right back.
Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers.
Wing, there's a drive to left. That one is long.
Eisenman, back over his step. Into the slot for Brown. Shoots. Yes. And there it goes. You never know when to expect it. Darren McCarty said before.
Ah, yes, that is the Throwback Thursday introduction, where we take a moment each and every Thursday here on WKAR's Current Sports, and we take a look at exactly what happened on this particular date in sports history. So today is September 19th, and I've got an all-baseball Throwback Thursday for you today. On this date, back in 1901, it's a long time ago, all Major League Baseball games were canceled for the funeral of U.S. President William McKinley. On this day, back in 1949, Ralph Kiner of the Pittsburgh Pirates, he became the first National League player to hit 50 home runs in two different seasons. Pretty impressive there. On this date, back in 1984, Pete Rose, he reached the 100-hit plateau for the 22nd consecutive year. He also tied the National League record for doubles with 725. I may be in the minority here. I think a few people are coming around, though. I believe that Pete Rose should be in the Baseball Hall of Fame, but with a huge asterisk, of course. But, you know, you can't deny some of the numbers that he had were just ridiculous. That's another conversation for another day, though. Also, two other players that many people have mixed opinions about. On this day back in 1997, Mark McGwire, he became the first major league player to hit 20 or more home runs for two teams in the same season. It was his 54th home run of the year. And also in 1999, Sammy Sosa. Yeah, Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa both making our Throwback Thursday here on September 19th. In 1999, Sammy Sosa became the first major league player to hit 60 home runs twice. That was such a fun run in the 90s watching Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa go back and forth. And on this day back in 02, Tom Gamboa, coach of the Kansas City Royals, he was attacked by a man and his son while he was standing near first base. The two fans were arrested and charged with battery. Yeah, fan is short for fanatic, and some of you guys are just crazy out there, all right? All right, folks, that does it for this Thursday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. On tomorrow's show, we will have an hour-long session filled with college football previews, including, of course, Michigan State, Northwestern, and Michigan and Wisconsin. Have a great rest of your Thursday, and as always, be easy, people.